As we go through the history of the people of God, we see that as we studied in the lesson a couple of weeks ago, that the people of God had determined that they no longer wanted to be under judges, that they needed a new direction and new leadership. And so they desired to have a king. God granted that request, but before He made that request, He told them of all the evil and all the horrible things that would befall them because of their desire to have a king. And yet they contended that they still knew what they needed and wanted a king, and so God gave them their king. That first king was named Saul, and we studied about him the last time that we had opportunity. We noticed that he reigned for a period of 40 years. But in the middle of his reign, he had become unfaithful because of not placing his trust in God, by not following His law, and so God determined to choose another man. A man that the Bible says was one after His own heart. That man was His servant David. And so David was chosen to be the next king of Israel. And as we left our lesson last time in the book of God at the end of 1 Samuel, he is killed by the enemies of God and his sons. And now the stage is set for the second king in the United Kingdom. That is the king of David. David is the second king in the United Kingdom. His reign and his life is discussed in the second book of Samuel. In the second book of Samuel, we have the details, and there are also other details in 1 Chronicles and 2 Chronicles. And so we have the entire record that God revealed to us what happened during the kingship of David. Now, as we begin to talk about David, David is an interesting character study. David is interesting because he is called a man after God's own heart. He is a man that is most well known of all the kings, even after the kingdom divides. He is one of the best and beloved of all the kings that Israel ever had. They enjoyed their greatest success during his reign. And he is one that is determined to be very diligent in his love for God. But yet we're going to see in the life of David that that did not mean he was perfect. He made some mistakes. And for the mistakes that he made, God caused some severe consequences to come upon him and his house. But as we begin the reign of David, we are introduced to Abimelech. Now he is a descendant and a son of Saul. We see that David received the news, the death of Saul and Jonathan. And he's in mourning for a period of time. If you remember, if you read in 2 Samuel chapter 1, that there is a man who comes to reveal to David that Saul has been killed. And he brings the crown to prove it. And he says that he came upon Saul when he was mortally wounded. And he asked this person to go ahead and to end his life. And so he did. And so he thought that coming to King David and telling him that his enemy was now killed, and now that he could ascend to the throne, that David would reward him. But if you study 2 Samuel chapter 1, he did just the opposite. He asked him a question. He said, "How is it that you could raise your sword against the Lord's anointed?" Do you remember on two different occasions, David had the opportunity to take Saul's life himself. Both times he was there, he had the means, he had the opportunity, but in the Bible it says he would not raise his hands against the Lord's anointed. He knew that Saul was anointed by God. When it was Saul's time to leave the scene, when it was God's time to take Saul out, God would do it in his own time. He would not hasten the timetable. And so this man who thought that he had done David a great service, David has him put to death because he raised his hand against the Lord's anointed. Now there is much conflict whether this man actually told the truth, because if we go back to 1 Samuel chapter 30, we see that he was mortally wounded. He asked his armor bearer to take and run him through before his enemies found him, and he refused to do that. So the Bible says in the end of 1 Samuel that Saul took his own life. But then this man says he came along and Saul was not dead yet and he finished the job. We really do not know if he told the truth or if he was just seeking favor from David. But either way, David understood that his actions, that he did not consider that Saul was anointed by God. And so instead of being greatly relieved that Saul is dead, he is greatly mourned. And he also mourned for Jonathan. Jonathan was his close friend. And he was killed with his father along with his other two sons. And so they go to Hebron, where the tribe of Judah is, and the tribe appoints David as king over Judah. Now at this particular time, he is not king over all of Israel. He is king over Judah. And he will be in Hebron, and he will reign there for a period of 7 years. He will not be over the entire nation for a period of time. We also know that Saul had a captain, Abner, and Abner, his chief of staff, appoints Abimelech as king over Israel in 2 Samuel chapter number 2, verse 8 through 11. And then you know what will happen. That will bring war between David and Abimelech, and he is slain, and then David rules all of Israel. And now Israel again is united. They have one king, and he will reign for the next 33 years over the whole kingdom of Israel. Now, what about David as king? David enjoys continued military success. Everywhere he goes to expound the boundaries of the children of Israel's land, he is successful. The capital moves from Jerusalem. In the Bible, the city of Jerusalem is referred to as the city of David. It is the capital city. It is where the temple will eventually be built, and it will be the center place of all worship in Israel, beginning in the reign of David, and will continue during the reign of Solomon. We also see that David decides to move the Ark of the Covenant to Jerusalem. But they used the wrong mode of travel. If you remember in Exodus, when the tabernacle was built, and you remember all the articles that would be in the tabernacle was a tent. It was a temporary structure that could be folded up and could be moved from place to place because they were wandering in the wilderness, and wherever they settled, they could set up the tabernacle. So that meant that not only did the tent of meeting have to be moved, but all the articles that were inside the tabernacle also had to be transported. And so God gave strict instruction that all the articles that went in the tabernacle could only be done by the Levites. And he gave a particular mode of transportation. The Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant was a box or a chest. And at the end of each box, there were rings on each end. And on the rings, you could put staves and you would run them through both sides. And then it could be carried by two or four men. And it was to be carried. It was not to be touched. It was only to be transported by the Levites. But in 2 Samuel chapter 6, when he goes to get the ark, he sends it and returns it home on a new cart. He built the cart and he put the Ark of the Covenant on the cart and the wagon. And then what he did is he began to take it back to Jerusalem. But what happens is, as they're traveling, the oxen began to stumble. And Uzzah, who was not a Levite, who was not of the tribe of Levi, reaches up his hand to take hold of the ark so it wouldn't fall off the cart. And God strikes him dead on the spot. Now, David is angry. But David bears part of the blame. David had the cart built. David put the ark on the cart. Therefore, he violated the mode of transportation. And so that's why Uzzah lost his life, because God said if anyone touched it, they would die. God was true to His promise. When He said that only the Levites, that's what He meant. And circumstances didn't change what God's law said. Now we understand, don't we, why Uzzah put his hand there. We understand it. The ark was a very important piece of the tabernacle. They had much confidence and they had much respect for the ark of the covenant. So we understand his action. But God did not change his law because of the circumstance. God said no Levite can touch it or look in it or they'll die. Uzzah made the wrong decision. David made the wrong decision. Now, because of the death of Uzzah, the ark stays at a man named Obed-Edom for 3 months. And then David goes back to take the ark from his house, but when he goes back, he takes the Levites. And it's not taken on a cart. It is transported by carrying it back to Jerusalem. And there is no problem. It gets back there safely, and there is no problem. Now, as they are bringing the ark into the city of David, into Jerusalem, his wife looks out the window and sees the king leaping and dancing before the ark. And the Bible says in 2 Samuel 6 that David was despised in her eyes. And then when he came in, she told him that he played the part of a fool. But David says he would not only leap for joy, he would not only dance, he would even do more because of his love for God and because of bringing the ark back to Jerusalem. And because of her chiding and rebuking David, she remains childless for the rest of her life. She bears no children to David because of her rebuking her husband. Now, David lives in a palace, very luxurious palace. And he looks over there at the house of God, and it's a tent. It's a tabernacle. And he's dwelling in a palace. And he says there's something wrong with that. And so he determines that he wants to build a temple, a worthy endeavor. He wants to build a permanent structure to honor God, that they might have a place to come and honor Him and worship Him. And so he determines that he wants to build this temple. Now David was richly blessed, and so he wants to pass on those blessings in thanksgiving and building God a house. But David would not be allowed to build the temple. But God gave him a very important promise. Turn to 2 Samuel chapter 7 and verse number 12. There are two main promises in the Bible. Number one are the promises made to Abraham. The second are the promises made to David in 2 Samuel chapter 7. We'll begin reading in verse 12. It says, "Now when your days are complete, and you lie down with your fathers, I will raise up your descendant after you, who will come forth from you, and I will establish his kingdom. He shall build a house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. And I will be a father to him, and he will be a son to me. When he commits iniquity, I will correct him with the rod of men and with the strokes of the son of men." And notice verse 16. "In your house and your kingdom shall be endured before me forever. Your throne shall be established forever." Now, that is a prophecy. And this has a dual fulfillment. In the first fulfillment, it had to do with Solomon building a house for God, the temple of God. But the second part of this prophecy is the spiritual house that will be built on the descendants of David, and that this kingdom will endure forever, and the throne that the descendant of David will sit on, he will reign forever. He's not talking about a physical throne. He is talking about a spiritual throne. And this throne, the one that sits on it, and the one who reigns on it, will reign forever. Now, you remember that promise, because you're going to see it again. Because this promise has to do with Christ, and with His kingship, and with His kingdom. But, in his old age, God would not allow David to build the temple, but he did allow him to make all the preparatory plans. He gathered all the gold, the silver, the material, the blueprints, the plans. He made everything ready for Solomon to build the temple. David would expand the kingdom of Israel. During the reign of David, the borders of kingdom enjoyed its greatest expanse during the reign of King David. Sometimes people call the reign of King David the golden age, the zenith of the age of Israel. It was when they had their greatest expansion, and it's when they were greatly respected in the nations around about. But because he was a man of war, and because he had blood on his hands, God would not allow him to build the temple. But he allowed him to do all the other work in setting everything in place so it could be built during the reign of Solomon. And that is discussed in chapters 8 through 10. But as great of a man that David was, and a beloved of God, and the greatest king of Israel, David was not perfect. He had some problems. And the first one raises his head in 2 Samuel chapter 11. David commits adultery. His troops are out fighting. David is home in the palace. And in one evening while he's in the royal palace, he goes up on top of his roof in the evening. And while he's up there, he sees a woman bathing across adjacent on another roof. Now, in this particular scenario, you see the progression of sin. You see, first of all, he should have been in the field with his troops, and he wasn't. Second of all, when he went out to the roof, there was nothing wrong with that. It could just be circumstance that he went out there at the same time that the lady was bathing, but when he saw her, he should have turned around and went back into his house. He didn't do that. He continued to look. But then he took the next step. Then he sought to find out who she was. And he sent out a messenger to find out who she was. And Bathsheba was Uriah the Hittite's wife. Who is Uriah? Uriah is one of the people in the army of David that is out in the field fighting David's battle. And so, when he finds out that she's Uriah's wife, that should have ended it. But it didn't. He sent for her. And then when he sent for her, he slept with her. And during the time that he slept with her, she sends word back that she's with child. Now David's got a problem. He had a problem already, but now he's got a real problem. Now this woman, who's another man's wife, has his child. Now, what does David do? What does David do? David tries to cover up his sin. How does he do that? He brings Uriah in. He wants to know, how's the battle going? Everything is well. That's good. I'm proud of you. Go down and spend some time with your wife. Seems like a normal thing, wouldn't it? He had been a faithful soldier. The king calls him in, tells him to go and spend the night and take ease and then go back to the battle tomorrow. But you know what? Uriah is an honorable man. His troops are in the field, sleeping in the fields and fighting in the fields. And so what does he do? He goes down to his house and he sleeps outside of his house. David calls him the next morning. He says, what are you doing? I told you to go and relax and ease. He goes, and he tells David, how can I do that? When your people are out in the field, they're fighting. And how can I go down and relax, eat and drink, and sleep with my wife? How can I do that? He says, I won't do that. And so now what was David going to do? Then he tries to get him drunk. And then have him go down to his house, lie with his wife. She becomes pregnant, nobody knows. But that didn't work either. Because he still wouldn't go in his house. So now what's he going to do? He sends Uriah back, but he sends him back with a message for Joab. And here's what the message says. You take Uriah, and you put him in the fiercest and the hottest battle, and you put him in the forefront, and then you pull away from him. Now what did David know? David knew when you attack a city, if they are in a tower, or if they have troops that are trying to defend the city, the first people that are going to get the onslaught are the people that are up front. And so what would happen is he would be killed in battle. Then she'd be a widow. And after the days of mourning had passed, he could call for her, and he could make her his wife. And that's exactly what he did. He got killed in battle. The word came back that he had died in battle. She had a period of mourning. After the mourning was over, she was added as one of his wives. And now the sin has been covered up. But there's a problem. There's a problem. David marries Bathsheba. Now if she's pregnant with his child, it doesn't matter because now she's his wife. But God knows. God sends Nathan, a prophet, with a little story to tell David. There are two men, and there is a stranger that is traveling in their company. And he comes to their house. And this one servant has many servants, many lands, and it comes time to feed the traveler. And he has many lambs, but his servant has this one little lamb. And he raised it as when it was small, and it was a pet. And it was very precious to him. But instead of taking one of his many lambs, he takes the only lamb that belonged to the servant, and he killed it and dressed it, and he gave it to the stranger to eat. You remember what Nathan said to David? What do you think should be done to such a man? Remember what David's reaction was? Why, it says he was wroth. He was angry. He says that man should have to pay fourfold for what he did. You remember the simple statement of Nathan? David, thou art the man. You see, that's what David did. David had wives. And God said, if you didn't have enough, I would give you some more. But you took Uriah's wife, his only wife, and you took her, and you laid with her, and you gave the enemies of God evidence to blaspheme, and you did this, it was hidden. And you made my name a blasphemy. You gave the enemy evidence to blaspheme me. He says, you did this in secret. I'm going to do it in openly. You remember what David said? Now what was Saul upset? Saul would have had some way out of it. But David didn't. David said, I've sinned. And Nathan said, God has put away your sin. And so David wasn't put to death. But did he escape punishment? No, he didn't. What punishment came because of David's sin? David repents of his sin, but he doesn't get off. Because he receives two punishments. Number one, the child that was conceived between him and Bathsheba would not live, it is going to die. And number two, the sword would never depart from his house. There would be blood on his hands throughout the rest of his reign as king. And it would come from his own home. Now do you think he escaped? No, he didn't escape. He was punished. the child is born. For a week, he lingers between life and death. For 7 days, David prays and will not eat. He fasts and prays and he asks for God's mercy. You want to see what was in the mind of David? Read Psalms 51. Psalms 51 is written to demonstrate the mind that David had. He wanted to try that God would not hold this child accountable for his sin. But you remember, the child died. And the servants are afraid to tell him. Because when he knows the child's dead, he'll be beside himself. But he sees them whispering. He says, the child's died, hadn't he? He said, yes. He goes in, cleans up, puts a new set of clothes on, and asks food to be brought before him. Why, his servants are amazed. They thought he'd be all distraught. But do you remember the great words of David at that time? He says, if I fast and I weep and I pray, can I bring him back? No. God's already gave his answer. He cannot come to me, but I can go to him. What David meant was, he could live his life in such a way that it would not be in vain that his child died, because he would see him again. If David could repent and remain faithful. Now, David and Bathsheba have another son. His name is Solomon. And he will become the next king in the United Kingdom. Now, but what about that second punishment? The sword would never depart from his house. What happened about that? There began to be moral decay in David's family. Amnon, David's oldest son, falls in love with his half-sister Tamar. In 2 Samuel 13, and he tricks her to come to his quarters, pretending to be sick, and he rapes her. And then after he has her, then she's despised in his eyes, and he sends her away. Who is her brother? Absalom. And when his sister comes back and tells Absalom what he has done, Absalom says, you just be quiet. You just do your mourning, and you just let this pass. And I want you to know that David did nothing about it. His son took his other son's life. He had tricked him. And what Amnon did was wrong. But what Absalom did was just as wrong. He plotted for 2 years. He waited for 2 years for the opportunity that he could act vengeance for his sister. And then he took Amnon's life, and David did nothing. David did nothing about it. David banishes Absalom from the kingdom. He does not punish him. He just sends him away. And after about 3 years, Joab intercedes to reconcile father and son, to bring him back to Jerusalem. But then when he comes back, David won't see him. He can come back, but David's not going to see him. And for 2 years, he doesn't see his father's face. He's in the same city, but David won't see him. And so he gets angry about that, and he burns Joab's fields until Joab comes down and says, get me an audience with my father. It'd been better if he put me to death than to bring me here and not see me. And so he reconciles them. But what does Absalom do after that? Absalom prepares a chariot, and he sits at the gate of the city. And everybody that's coming into the city to petition the king for a problem, Absalom asks like he's concerned. And he says, oh, that I was judge in Israel. Oh, if I was in the position of being king, I would hear your problem and I would give you relief. And you know what he's doing? He's trying to win the hearts of Israel against his father. He's setting himself up to overthrow his father's throne. And all this time, David knows it and does nothing about it. And he's gaining popularity with the people, Absalom. And so he bides his time. And Absalom rebels and steals the hearts of the people, and David runs away and flees the city of Jerusalem. Now after he flees and he runs, his advisors say, "What can I do to prove to the people that I'm king?" You remember what he did with Bathsheba? He did it in secret. But when he fled out of the kingdom, he took everything but his concubines. He left them there in the house to keep the house. And so what his advisor says, you take those concubines, you take them up on the roof of his palace, and you commit fornication in wide view of the whole nation. And that's what he did. And they'll know that David is despised in your eyes. This is the king's son. He's trying to steal the kingdom away from his father. And he's making a statement, but you remember what Nathan told David? You did this thing secretly, but I'm going to repay you openly. How humiliating is it for David that his son runs him out of his own kingdom and then has relations with his own concubines in his own palace? You think David didn't pay for his sin? You don't think there was consequence for what David did? David forces fight with Absalom forces. But before they go out, David says, be kind, be gentle with Absalom. And so they come back and tell Joab, hey, we know where Absalom is. He got caught in a tree. He had real thick hair. And he was running away and he got caught in a tree branch. And he's hanging in the tree. And Joab says, did you kill him? He goes, no, we didn't kill him. We heard what David told you. We're not going to kill him. He said, where is he? So they told him where he was. Joab went down there with some soldiers. He takes his spear, thrusts it in his heart, and he kills Absalom, and he buries him there in a heap. Now, the rebellion is over. David can come back to the city. And so he's in the city and the battle is over. The rebellion has been squashed. Absalom is dead. And so now he's back in the city of Jerusalem. And David is overcome with grief. He sees a runner. And he says he's coming with good news. Does he want to know if the victory's been secured? Does he want to know if the rebellion's been put down? No. What is his only concern? What about Absalom? What about my son? And the messenger says, everyone that sought to do you harm is dead. He knew that included Absalom. What does David do? He goes into deep mourning. David returns to Jerusalem and does not punish those that were involved in the rebellion. He is so grief-stricken, he doesn't even go out and thank his troops that brought his kingdom back to him. And Joab says, I think you would have been happy if he would have won and we would have been defeated and killed. That would have been better for you. And you know what Joab tells him? He says, if you don't go out there and you don't show the love you have for your people and thanksgiving that they return your kingdom, there's not a man in this kingdom that will stand with you tomorrow. He goes out and he thanks them. And he reunites their kingdom. And now the other tribes charge David with favoring Judah because they didn't call him to help them. 3 years of famine in the land is God's divine judgment. Divine judgment because of Saul's mistreatment of the Gibeonites in 2 Samuel 21. And 7 of Saul's descendants are killed. And when all the descendants of Saul are put to death, then the famine is lifted. Now, contrary to God's will, he sends Joab to number the people. He wants to know how many of them there are. Joab tries to talk him out of it. He says, this is a bad thing. God didn't tell you to number the people. You see, he wanted to know where his strength was. Did he need to know how many? If God was with him, did he need to know how many? No. God didn't ask for this census. David did this on his own. So God says, David, I'm going to punish you. And you can choose your own punishment. He gave him three choices. 7 more years of famine. Well, that didn't sound too good. They've already went through 3. They didn't want 7 more. 2, he could flee before his enemy for 3 months. He could be on the run away from his enemy for 3 months. He would be a vagabond on the run. Well, he didn't want that either. He didn't want to be handed into the hands of his enemies. So what was the third thing? 3 days of pestilence from God. That means disease. God sent disease upon the people, and 70,000 men died in those 3 days. And God was just about to destroy Jerusalem when God told the angel, it's enough. And he kept his angel from destroying Jerusalem. That's a lot of men, isn't it? But isn't that what David put his faith in? The numbers? So God lessened the numbers. Now you remember, this is a man after God's own heart. This is a man that's considered the greatest king in Israel. But that doesn't mean he was perfect, does it? But you know what he did every time he was confronted with his sin? He admitted it. He took responsibility. He repented of it. And he did better. David then worships God when the days of pestilence are over. And David pleads with God to show mercy on the people because they did not sin, he sinned. Don't take it out on them, take it out on me. So God hears his prayer, stays the prayer. And it's said in Samuel chapter 24, he instructs Saul to build an altar and to offer sacrifice to God. So he goes to a man who has a threshing floor. He wants to buy a field. He wants to buy his land. He wants to buy some wood so he can make a sacrifice to God. And you know what the man said? Take it, David. You can have the field. You can have the wood. Here's the oxen. I'll give you what you need for the sacrifice. Take anything you need. You don't have to give me a cent. You remember what David said? In 2 Samuel chapter 24, in 2 Samuel 24, David said, I will not offer to God that which cost me nothing. He paid for the field. He paid for the wood. He paid for the ox. He paid for what he needed. He wasn't going to offer something to God that did not cost him anything. There's a lesson there, brethren. If our offering to God doesn't cost us something, it is useless. If it's not a sacrifice, if it's not something that we give willingly and wantingly, and it's something that comes that costs us something, our time, our effort, whatever it is, if it doesn't cost us something, then God's not going to accept it. That's an eternal principle. David understood that. And so he paid for what he needed, and then he offered the sacrifice to God, and God stopped the plague. And he fell down and he worshiped God. And then from there, David organized a part of 30 men, a special little group, a military group. And it's known for its heroism. And it does many valiant things towards the end of the reign of King David. David divided the Levites into 24 courses to serve in the temple, appointed singers for the temple, set aside doorkeepers, along with silver and religious officers to serve Israel, gave letters to get the timber, to get the stone, took the silver, the gold, the press. He gathered it all up and he put it in the storehouse of the Lord and he left it for his son Solomon. And at the end of his reign, if you would read in 2 Chronicles chapter 25, you will see his last charge to his son prior to his death. And what he tells him is, you do everything that God commands you to do, and you don't let your heart stray anywhere to the right or to the left. And he will be with you, and you will prosper. Now, what can we learn from the kingship of David. David was a man. He wasn't Superman. He was a man with human weakness, human frailties, but yet he did marvelous things for God. But when he sinned, the difference between Saul and David was Saul blamed others. David accepted his responsibility, corrected his mistake, and he went on to do better. That's why Acts says that David was a man after God's own heart. Tonight, in Matthew chapter 1, in the genealogy of our Lord, two names are mentioned in the very first verse of the Bible in Matthew 1. The genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of Abraham, and the son of David. David is tied to Jesus Christ by the prophecy of 2 Samuel chapter 7. The throne that Jesus now reigns at the right hand of God is the spiritual throne of David. What the premillennialists think is that throne is going to be in Jerusalem and Jesus is going to reign on it for 1,000 years in Jerusalem. That's wrong. He's reigning on it now in heaven at the right hand of God, and he is ruling and reigning in his kingdom as a fulfillment of the promise made to David in 2 Samuel 7. In the next time that we come together, we will talk about the last king in the United Kingdom, the King Solomon. David's reign was 40 years, 33 years in Israel, 7 years in Hebron, a total of 40 years. And now we've had a United Kingdom of 80 years. 40 Saul, 40 David, that leaves 40 more. And that will be Solomon. And that's what we'll discuss next time we have opportunity to study. If you're here tonight, you're not a child of God, understand that God's plan was made before time began. That all the things that we're reading about in history are the pieces of the puzzle that God put together in order to bring His Son to this earth. His Son came here to live an example before men, to do His Father's will, and to die a cruel death upon the cross in order that we might have redemption and an avenue to have forgiveness of sin. And that sacrifice and that particular part of God's plan now makes it possible that we can receive the spiritual blessing. Hearing the Word of God, believing it, repenting of our sin, confessing His good name, and submitting to the watery grave of baptism places one into the family of God. But when you come up out of the water, you arise to walk in newness of life because you have contacted the blood of Christ that washes away your sin. And now you're a Christian, you're a brother, you're a sister, you're an heir, you're a member of the kingdom, you're a part of the Lord's church, and now you have a hope of heaven when you die, if, just like Israel this morning in class, if we keep His commandments and we are faithful, we will have access to the blessings of heaven. If you're here and you are a Christian and you've not done that, you need to pray and you need to come home and you need to ask God to give you strength, encouragement, and He will bless you and forgive you. If we can help you in any way tonight, we bid you to come forward as together we stand.